Our headlines, U.S. President Joe Biden says NATO would respond if Russia uses a chemical weapon against Ukraine and calls for the expulsion of Russia from G20. Iran expresses concern about the escalating humanitarian situation in Ukraine and calls for an immediate halt to the fighting there through dialogue. And North Korea says it's prepared for a long confrontation with U.S. imperialism as it confirms the test launch of a new intercontinental missile. Thank you for joining us. U.S. President Joe Biden warns Moscow that NATO would respond if Russia uses chemical weapons during its military operation in Ukraine. Speaking at a news conference after a NATO meeting on Ukraine, Biden said the nature of the response depends on the nature of the use of chemical weapons. He also pointed to the unity among the NATO member states in the face of Russia's offensive, saying the Russian president has failed to divide the West with his war on Ukraine. Meanwhile, he proposed Russia's removal from the group of 20 industrialized and developing nations. Since the beginning of the Russian military operation in Ukraine in late February, Western countries have responded by imposing crippling sanctions on Russia and sending military equipment to Ukraine. However, they are divided on issues such as imposing further sanctions on Russia and the establishment of a no-fly zone proposed by Ukraine. The NATO leaders have held a summit in Brussels. Speaking to journalists after the meeting, the NATO chief said the Western military alliance has agreed to provide more support to Ukraine. Jens Stoltenberg also claimed Russia may be trying to create a pretext for the use of chemical weapons in Ukraine, an allegation that Moscow rejects.
Today, NATO leaders agreed that we must and will provide further support to Ukraine. We will continue to impose unprecedented costs on Russia, and we will reinforce Allied deterrence and defense. Leaders approved our four new battle groups in Bulgaria, Hungary, Romania, and Slovakia. These are in addition to the four already in the Baltic countries and Poland. So we have eight multinational NATO battle groups now, from the Baltic Sea to the Black Sea. So we are concerned, partly because we see the rhetoric, and we see that Russia is trying to create some kind of pretext, accusing Ukraine, United States, NATO allies, for preparing to use chemical and biological weapons. And we have seen before that this way of accusing others is actually a way to create a pretext for do the same themselves. And of course, the accusations against Ukraine and NATO allies are absolutely false.
The West is tightening the noose of sanctions against Russia over its military operation in Ukraine. Now the UK has blacklisted several Russian banks and industries. Britain has frozen the assets of Alpha Bank, which is one of Russia's top private leaders, or lenders, I should say. It has also targeted Gazprom Bank, one of the main channels of payment for Russian oil and gas. The two banks, in addition to four others, will be locked out of any resources held in the UK. Russia's shipping firm, Sovcomflot, has also been placed on Britain's sanctions list. Separately, Poland has reportedly blocked the Russian embassy's bank accounts. And the Swiss government says it has frozen about $6 billion of Russian assets in Switzerland. Swiss banks are said to be holding some $200 billion worth of Russian wealth. The European Commission unveils plans aimed at preventing food and energy shortages across the 27-nation EU, resulting from the conflict in Ukraine. Analysts are skeptical that the measures will work as the cost of living in the bloc reaches record highs. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
Due to the conflict in Ukraine and Western sanctions against Russia, it has never been more costly to buy essential food items in the European Union, and the situation is set to get much worse. The world's biggest wheat producer is Russia, the third largest is Ukraine.
Wheat is a very good example. When I say wheat, we are actually talking about bread to feed people.
In fact, wheat prices have risen by 70%. The European Commission has just unveiled plans to support food producers and reduce tax to 0% on certain food items. €330 million has been announced to support Ukrainian farmers.
They need, for the spring sowing campaign, they need 50,000 tons of fuel per week.
Animal feedstocks are on the decline. Campaigners say millions could starve in East Africa if EU leaders don't do more to help poorer nations. Syria and Yemen have also been singled out for needing special support.
There are in fact 14 low-income countries which depend for more than 50% of their wheat imports on these two countries, on Ukraine and Russia.
The European Commission has presented new legislation to make it mandatory for member states to ensure 80% gas reserves are put in place before November. Experts say that is wishful thinking. 3.5 million Ukrainian refugees have now arrived in the EU. Most countries in the bloc have failed to take in their fair share, but some already have.
Poland is in top. The country number two is Austria. The country number three is Cyprus. Country number four is Czech Republic.
Almost €3.5 billion has been set aside from the EU budget to support refugees, including 1,470 unaccompanied children who have arrived in the bloc from Ukraine. Some nations are saying it's simply not enough money. EU leaders will hold a summit here on Thursday and Friday to consider, amongst other things, a request from Poland for new funding towards the cost of dealing with the growing refugee crisis. All indications so far suggest that request will be rejected. Jerome Hughes at the Council of the EU, Brussels.
China has declared neutrality in the conflict over Ukraine since its very beginning, and NATO keeps accusing Beijing of backing Russia's operation. The Chinese government, however, says the Western military alliance is merely propagating lies.
Accusing China of spreading false information about Ukraine is itself spreading false information. China has always made positive efforts to instate ceasefire and end the war at an early date, avoid a humanitarian crisis and restore peace and stability in an objective and fair manner. We have always maintained that Ukraine should become a bridge between the East and West, rather than be in the front line in a game between great powers.
China's foreign ministry spokesman also called on Europe to adopt a calm and rational stance and work with both Russia and Ukraine to restore stability. He said the West must try to ensure the security concerns of all parties and avoid coercion. The Chinese spokesman made the remarks after NATO's chief claimed Beijing is supporting Russia's operation in Ukraine by spreading, quote, blatant lies. China has always been for a peaceful resolution to the Ukraine conflict. And the Iran expresses concern about the escalating humanitarian situation in Ukraine and its surrounding regions. Iran's ambassador to the United Nations, Majid Takht-Ravanchi, stressed the need to respect the sovereignty of all nations and guarantees for safe passage of civilians and protection of civilian infrastructure. The Iranian diplomat called for de-escalation and an immediate halt to the conflict through dialogue. He made the remarks after the UN General Assembly voted for a resolution criticizing Russia for its operation in Ukraine. The draft resolution was passed with 140 votes in favor, 5 against, and 38 abstentions, including by Iran. Takht-Ravanchi says the resolution's text included wordings that would go beyond the issue of settling the humanitarian crisis caused by the war. Tehran and Moscow are working on integrating their financial systems by using Russia's interbank payment system, Mir, to facilitate transactions. Iran's ambassador to Moscow, Qasem Jalali, says the two sides are discussing ways for recognizing bank cards using the Mir system. He says efforts are underway to connect Iranian banks to Russia's financial messaging system. The move is aimed at bypassing SWIFT, a global network for financial transactions. Iran and Russia are both under severe Western sanctions. Most of Russia's domestic payments are made through Mir. The operator was established in 2015 as an alternative in case Russia was disconnected from SWIFT. That after Crimea joined Russia following a referendum the year before. Rodney Shakespeare, an economics professor, says countries are making their own financial networks to survive potential sanctions imposed by the U.S.
This is something which is increasing in speed. Think back a few months. Afghanistan loses all its foreign reserves and gold, $9 billion worth. The Americans grab it. And now Russia loses half its reserves, is it? And is sanctioned left, right, and center, and Iran is sanctioned. And the message is out there that any country in this world can be sanctioned. Any individual can be sanctioned. And as a result, it is inevitable that you get what you see today, which is Iran and Russia tying up with the MER interbank system and other arrangements. And other countries are doing the same. They are all scared of being sanctioned and having trade stopped by the Americans. I think the Americans are overplaying their hand. They're actually speeding up the creation of a multipolar world rather than the uni one, which they still dream about, but in reality is now rapidly losing its strength.
North Korea says it has prepared for a long confrontation with U.S. imperialism after it confirmed testing an intercontinental ballistic missile. The country's leader, Kim Jong-un, who directly oversaw the test, has said the missile is key to deter a nuclear war. He said Pyongyang is determined to strengthen a powerful nuclear deterrent. According to North Korea's state media, the missile is a new type of ICBM that is the biggest one North Korea has ever tested. It is the country's first such test since 2017. South Korea, Japan, and the U.S. have condemned the missile launch and called for an emergency U.N. Security Council meeting to address the escalating situation. Jennifer Chang, our correspondent in Seoul, is with us on the line. Jennifer, it's good to talk to you. Tell us more about this intercontinental ballistic missile.
This is a very big threat to the U.S. because it's a huge improvement over North Korea's previous ICBM, which it tested in 2017. It has been nearly 5 years since the North tested an ICBM. This new ICBM, unlike the previous one in 2017, can carry multiple warheads. It can also carry decoys along with a real nuclear warhead, and that would confuse U.S. missile defense systems on the U.S. mainland. And experts are saying that U.S. missile defenses are woefully inadequate to deal with such an ICBM. So this is a real game changer, and this will definitely strengthen North Korea's position in any potential future negotiations with the U.S. Now, the Biden administration has said that it is willing to hold negotiations over the North's nuclear program, but the North feels that these are insincere efforts at denuclearization because the U.S. is continuing its hostile policy of sanctions and military drills. These military drills that it holds with its ally, South Korea, practice a preemptive strike on North Korea's nuclear and missile facilities. And now, with a new conservative South Korean president due to be inaugurated in a ceremony on May 10th, this latest show of force will be something that the conservative president had better think seriously about. He said when he was campaigning that if it seems like a North Korean attack on the South is imminent, an invasion, that he would be justified in launching a preemptive strike on North Korea, a military attack. So North Korea is saying that it will not be risking any kind of nuclear war. This is a nuclear war deterrent, this ICBM. And the U.S. and South Korea have to think twice before they attempt to conduct a nuclear military attack on the North. Any military attack on the North would involve nuclear weapons because the North has its own nuclear weapons. It's a nuclear power. And the U.S. has been practicing, in fact, such a possibility. They have been practicing combat scenarios with South Korea amid these tests that the North has been doing this month. It conducted two previous tests in March, and the U.S. claimed that these were components of an ICBM that the North was testing, and conducted anti-missile defense drills and nuclear combat scenarios. And they are now talking, these two allies, about deploying strategic assets here and resuming the Blue Lightning drills involving bombing North Korea with U.S. military planes stationed in Guam, dropping nuclear bombs on North Korea. So the situation is escalating here on the Korean Peninsula. It's not as bad as Ukraine, obviously, but North Korea is not going to be ignored, even amid this war in Ukraine. It is being sanctioned harshly by U.S.-led countries, and the U.S. is going to have a hard time punishing the North even further for this ICBM test because of the war in Ukraine. Russia and China, unlike in 2017, are not going to help the U.S. sanction North Korea over the latest ICBM test.
Jennifer, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming on. That was Jennifer Changar, correspondent in Seoul.
Well, that's your world news for now. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Startling heat waves at both of Earth's poles are causing alarm among climate scientists, who have warned the unprecedented events could signal faster and abrupt climate breakdown. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Brett Wilkins, journalist. This article is published under the heading Unthinkable: Scientists Shocked at Polar Temperatures Soar 50 to 90 Degrees Above Normal. Here's the story. Scientists expressed shock and alarm recently amid extreme high temperatures near both of the Earth's poles, the latest signs of the accelerating planetary climate emergency. Temperatures in parts of Antarctica were 50 degrees Fahrenheit to 90 degrees Fahrenheit above normal in recent days, while earlier this week, the mercury soared to over 50 degrees Fahrenheit higher than average, close to the freezing mark in areas of the Arctic. Stefano B. Battista, an Arctic climatologist, tweeted that such record-shattering heat near the South Pole was unthinkable and impossible. Antarctic climatology has been rewritten, Di Battista wrote. The joint French-Italian Concordia research station in eastern Antarctica recorded an all-time high of 10 degrees Fahrenheit. In contrast, high temperatures at the station this time in March averaged below minus 50 degrees Fahrenheit. Jonathan Will, a researcher studying polar meteorology at Université Grenoble-Alpes in France, told The Washington Post that this event is completely unprecedented and upended our expectations about the Antarctic climate system. Will said, this is when temperatures should be rapidly falling since the summer solstice in December. This is a Pacific Northwest 2021 heatwave kind of event, referring to the record-breaking event in which parts of Canada topped 120 degrees Fahrenheit for the first time in recorded history, never supposed to happen. Walt Mayer, a senior research scientist at the National Snow and Ice Data Center in Boulder, Colorado, told USA Today that you don't see the North and the South Poles both melting at the same time because they are opposite seasons, he added. It's definitely an unusual occurrence. As Common Dreams has reported, the Arctic has been warming three times faster than the world as a whole, accelerating polar ice melt, ocean warming, and other manifestations of the climate emergency. Looking back over the last few decades, we can clearly see a trend in warming, particularly in the cold season in the Arctic, Rat Matram, a climate scientist with the Danish Meteorological Institute, told The Post, adding, it's not surprising that warm air is busting through into the Arctic this year. In general, we expect to see more and more of these events in the future. James Hansen, former NASA chief scientist and one of the first to warn governments of global heating more than three decades ago, told The Guardian the heating of the poles was concerning and that sea ice in the Arctic this year could shrink far enough to break a decade-old record on its lowest extent. The average sea ice thickness has been declining, so it's ripe for large sea ice loss, he warned. The effect of reduced sea ice cover is to amplify Earth's energy imbalance that's caused by increasing greenhouse gases, or GHGs. The GHGs reduce outgoing heat radiation, thus causing a net imbalance that's heating the planet. Reduced sea ice cover increases the planetary energy imbalance, as a dark ocean reflects less sunlight than sea ice does.
Food for thought.
Salam, and let us contemplate on what Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, the 15th infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, has said about Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance. The master of the command was named as Mahdi because he will dig out the Torah and other heavenly books from the cave in Antioch. He will judge among the people of the Torah according to the Torah, among the people of gospel according to the gospel, among the people of Psalms in accordance with the Psalms, among the people of the Quran accordance with the Quran. Congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who celebrates the ancient festivity of Nowruz. On behalf of myself and all my colleagues here at IRIB English Radio, we wish you a wonderful Nowruz, full of happiness and prosperity.
Seventh Imam, Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salatu wa salam, is actually known as Bab al-Hawaij.
قال الإمام الكاظم عليه السلام خير الأمور أوسطها.
زيارة of Imam Musa ibn Ja'far al-Kazim alayhi salam.
السلام عليك يا مولاي موسى ابن جعفر ورحمة الله.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome, dear listeners. I'm your host, Mehdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam. Imam Musa ibn Ja'far al-Kadhim alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was also the seventh divinely appointed Imam from among the household of the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Now we find that Imam Musa al-Kadhim's life, in all of its various dimensions, is distinguished in a few things. First of all, he is distinguished in the firmness and the strength for which he stood up for when it came to the right, to truth, to haq. We also find his steadfastness in front of all kinds of events, trials and tribulations, good or bad. And we also see Imam Musa al-Kadhim's luminous behavior, his actions, his morals, and his ethics, of which no deviation or crookedness has ever been reported. And finally, the life of Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam is marked by balance. It is in harmony with that of the life of the Prophet Muhammad. These are his dialogues.
قال الإمام الكاظم عليه السلام: لا ينبغي للرجل أن يدع الطيب في كل يوم، فإن لم يقدر عليه فيوم ويوم لا، فإن لم يقدر ففي كل جمعة ولا يدع.
Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam stated, "Man should not leave one day without perfuming himself, and if he is not able to do that, then he should perfume himself every other day. And if he cannot do that, then he should do so every Friday without fail."
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us on the program. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. In the various conversations and dialogues of the divinely appointed Imam, Imam Musa ibn Ja'far al-Kadhim alayhi salam, we find that Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam advised his companions to show the bounties given by Allah and to be grateful to Allah for these bounties that the Almighty God has given them. So, dear friends, this tradition and this conversation and this dialogue between Imam al-Kadhim and his companions continues, and we can talk about it in another program. But just to discuss what was just said by Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam, which was to talk about the bounties given by Allah is considered gratitude. And to leave this idea of talking about the bounties given by Allah is ingratitude. Now, here it's important for us to remember that talking about the bounties given by Allah does not mean showing off in front of other people. It does not mean throwing this in the face of other people, oh, I have this and I have that. No, these are actually considered sins. Showing off, riya, is considered a sin. Bragging about what you have in front of another individual, which of course will most probably make them sad and depressed, that is considered a sin. Because you are hurting the feelings and saddening a fellow brother and sister in iman and in faith. Here, when it is said that talk about the bounties given by Allah is gratitude, is when you thank the Almighty Allah and you verbally speak about these bounties, perhaps to yourself or to your close ones, and you discuss with each other the bounties that Allah has given to each and every one of us. And this is truly gratitude, because you acknowledge that the bounty given and the blessing given has been given by the Almighty Allah. But when you don't even talk about the bounties that Allah has given you in a respectful, honorable, and noble manner, right? We say, Allah has given us such a good job. Allah has given us such a beautiful house. Allah has given us such beautiful family members, spouses, children, grandparents, etc. When you talk about these things and you really appreciate these things, this is what is considered one of the first steps towards true gratitude towards the Almighty, the Merciful Allah. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Now let's listen to Brother Muhammad Al-Hilli, who's going to talk about today's topic.
One day he came to the shrine of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. When he would enter, Harun would say, "Assalamu alayka yabn al-am." Peace and blessings be upon you, O cousin. Imam alayhi salam would then stand in front of the shrine and would say, "Assalamu alayka ya abata." Peace and blessings be upon you, O my father. Harun would say, "How dare you? How could you call him as your father?" Imam Musa ibn Ja'far would respond to him by saying that if today Rasulullah would come and would want to propose and take your daughter, would you accept? Harun would say, "It would be a privilege, something of an honor that I would give Rasulullah my daughter." Imam Musa ibn Ja'far would respond back by saying that he would never ask for my daughter because my daughter is also his daughter and he would not ask for it. And therefore my line is quite straight towards him and I am closer to him. And this idea that was truly powerful influenced the way Harun would deal with Imam Musa ibn Ja'far. And that's why you see that today one of the important aspects that stand out in the life of the Imam is the fact that he spent so many years in prison.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at farstoday.com/EN, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news, with the light.
Turkey inaugurates the world's longest suspension bridge over the Dardanelles Strait. The bridge is more than 2 kilometers long and connects Turkey's European and Asian shores. It cuts travel time between the two locations to just 6 minutes. A consortium of Turkish and South Korean firms began constructing the huge bridge in 2017 with a budget of 2.5 billion euros. 5,000 workers participated in the colossal undertaking. Passenger vehicles must pay a fare of 200 Turkish liras or around $14 to use the bridge. In Peru, paleontologists have unearthed the skull of a ferocious marine predator that is an ancestor of the modern-day whale. The 36-million-year-old skull was dug up intact after it was discovered in Peru's southern desert. The fossil belongs to an ancient mammal whose contemporary descendants include dolphins. Recreations of how the animal looked like show it mostly resembles a giant lizard that moved like a snake. Paleontologists say it was a top predator measuring some 12 meters long.
So
I mean,
the discovery is very important because the skull is in a perfect state of preservation. The skull and the jaw are in the right anatomical position. The teeth are complete. It's very possible this might be a new Basilosaurus species. If this is so, there is no other fossil like this one anywhere else in the world.
Salas further explained when the ancient animal died, its skull might have sunk to the bottom of the sea floor, where it was quickly preserved. The skull, measuring 1.3 meters long, was unveiled at Lima's Museum of Natural History. The Peruvian desert is rich in fossils and offers scientists 42 million years' worth of evolutionary evidence. Other fossils found there include the four-legged dwarf whale and sharks, among others. A painter in Pakistan shifts from trucks to trainers to uncover a hip new canvas for his famous truck art. Haydar Ali says he works on each pair of shoes for up to 4 days, and his paint of choice is mainly acrylic. He also uses other forms of durable material such as oil paint to get the job done. The seasoned artist charges select clients $400 for each set. His designs feature intricate bespoke patterns including flowers, peacocks, and wildly colorful motifs. He says new requests typically arrive every 4 days. Orders for painted trainers started pouring in for the truck artist after a surge of social media interest.
Ideas keep popping up for me, and sometimes clients have ideas. A client came to me from the US asking for a painting on some shoes. I told him an exorbitant fee to discourage him, but he agreed, so I decided, let's do it then.
He has dispatched 8 pairs to various places in Pakistan and abroad since he first started painting trainers in January. Ali comes from a family of truck artists who made a living off of painting lorries. He came to international fame when his work was exhibited at a museum in the U.S. 2 decades ago. So far, the veteran truck artist has applied his craft to an airplane as well as a passenger car, among others. The art form is mainly seen on Pakistani trucks, and today, the trade is one of the country's most famous cultural exports.
Archaeologists have discovered a 500-year-old Aztec altar with 164 in Mexico City, Mexico's largest starfish offering discovered to date. Archaeologists believe it was built around the year 1500. Jaguar bones and other remains such as sea shells were also found. Scientists believe the fossils found correspond to a species known as chocolate chip sea star or Nidorella armata.
This is really interesting because if you think about it, chocolate chip sea star looks like the skin of a jaguar. It's orange with the dark spots. Probably that is why this species was selected, but we still need to analyze all the starfish because we found 160 of them and we think they all belong to the same species. But we need to research further every one of them.
According to experts, the location of the altar within the Templo Mayor complex and the jaguar motifs suggest the offering was related to the war. Mexico is brimmed with archaeological sites of several civilizations, including Aztecs. Retired racehorses could be retrained for a new role as so-called therapy horses. According to a study led by the University of Bristol, veterans and disabled children, as well as those struggling with mental health issues, can benefit from the therapy horses. The 3-year study aims to provide a global standard for the racing industry and a toolkit for retraining racehorses. A racehorse's career can last anywhere between 2 and 10 years, but better could be done to make use of these beautiful creatures soon after they're retired.
So racehorses, when they finish their racing careers, and they can finish as young as sort of 3 or 4 years old, they really don't want to be just standing around in fields for the next 20, 30 years. And they're so versatile that there's, I really believe there's a job for 99% of them. I think there's almost a sixth sense with the horse. So with people needing therapy, whether that's mental health or physical disabilities, there seems to be sort of something that gels between a horse and a human.
Horse trainers say with the thoroughbred's lifespan between 25 to 30 years, this study's aim is crucial for their long-term welfare. Over 7,000 racehorses end their career every year in Britain, with many going into eventing and pleasure riding. A killer whale beached on a Mexican shore has been rescued by locals and environmentalists. Volunteers with a group called Youth Allied to the Environment helped carry the orca out of the sea. The whale was loaded onto a truck and taken to a large dock for medical examination. Volunteers say locals gathered to form a human chain in an effort to quickly fill the tub with water. The orca is being treated at a marine biology department of the Yucatan Autonomous University. Veterinarians say the whale appeared to have some pulmonary problems and will be released back to the ocean after the recuperation.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
To some people, it is just garbage. But to this Filipino woman, recyclable items have become a source of livelihood as she turns them into beautiful outfits. Leonora Biovaje is an experienced dressmaker who can weave and stitch nearly any type of material together to make fashionable frocks and gowns. She uses newspapers, plastic wrappers, and rice sacks as her clothing materials. She says rice sacks have the advantage of print and patterns, which both bring texture and color to her designs. This seamstress says she often uses packaging and bubble wraps from her children's delivery orders to make her gowns, among other materials.
It's good to use recycled materials because the cost is inexpensive. All you are really paying for is labor. It is durable, colorful, and we can help the environment at the same time.
She says her dresses sell for $30 to $50 and are used in weddings and other debut events. The recycled materials used for each dress would depend on her client's request. Her designs using recycled materials have also caught the attention of local fashion events. Leonora says she hopes to inspire others to create clothing out of ordinary recycled materials.
Elephant Day in Thailand. The country celebrates the large animal as a source of national pride and cultural identity throughout its history. One celebration took place in Chonburi province on the eastern Gulf of Thailand coast. Dozens of elephants were hosted at a famous botanical park. The animals were treated to 2 tons of fruits and vegetables laid out on a table as wide as 8 meters. Elephants in the past were used for labor, transport, and in battlefields by warriors and kings. But nowadays, they're no longer used for heavy-duty jobs.
And time have changed. These elephants now, they are no longer used. We have better equipment to carry log and all that. So they become what we call homely elephant. These have been their life. We train them, they rest among us, we give them food. So now they have a homely life. Hopefully life, we have to support them. So now they go to the tourist attraction place, they're riding elephant, and all this.
The feast takes place on March 13th every year and commonly in various parts of Thailand. But this year, celebrations were few because of the COVID pandemic and the economic woes that have come with it. Competition at stand-up paddleboard events is fierce, but competing on Europe's biggest underground lake adds another level of difficulty. One such race has been held in Switzerland as part of the seven-stage Alpine Lakes Tour. Some 60 paddlers have competed on the 300-meter-long underground lake on an illuminated course. Organizers named it the Bat Race because it was staged in a cave.
It's a great day because we're on an underground lake and this only takes place here. There's nothing like this elsewhere. And really, the atmosphere is great because we're in the dark. We paddle without knowing where we're going. It's a really fun atmosphere.
Other athletes were excited about the setting, describing it as wonderful and magnificent. They said it was magical to see the trout deep underwater inside the cave. Others said they sometimes struggled to breathe, but all the participants agreed that it was absolutely fun.
Local fishermen have rescued an injured baby manatee on a bay in far southeastern Cuba. The fishermen are nursing the injured baby manatee with cow and goat milk mixed with coconut water. They discovered the injured manatee with gashes on his head and body in Maria del Portillo Bay near Havana. Upon arrival on shore, the fishermen recruited volunteers for a nearby farming village.
We were fishing along the shore when we saw the manatee coming. When it approached us, we realized it was injured. It had several wounds on its body, one on the head and two on the rest of the body. Between the two of us, we made the decision to take her to the port of Maria del Portillo, where the boats were moored. When we got there, the whole town was very surprised. Some people ran to help us, others ran to get milk. Seeing that it was small and knowing that it's a mammal, we decided to give it some milk. The people who have cows gave us cow's milk. Those who have goats gave us goat's milk.
Manatees are aquatic mammals akin to giant water-borne cow. The mammal is found in sheltered bays and estuaries throughout Cuba. Scientists say coastal communities could play a key role in protecting marine species and their habitats.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
The ghastly blockade and bombardment of Yemen, led by Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, is now entering its eighth year, says Candy Kelly, author, in an article published under the heading, "The People of Yemen Suffer Atrocities Too." Stay tuned for more. The United Nations goal was to raise more than $4.2 billion for the people of war-torn Yemen by March 15th. But when that deadline rolled around, just $1.3 billion had come in. "I am deeply disappointed," said Jan Egeland, the Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, adding, "The people of Yemen need the same level of support and solidarity that we've seen for other people around the world." The ghastly blockade and bombardment of Yemen, led by Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, is now entering its eighth year. The United Nations estimated last fall that the Yemen death toll would top 377,000 people by the end of 2021. The United States continues to supply spare parts for Saudi and UAE coalition warplanes, along with maintenance and a steady flow of armaments. Without this support, the Saudis couldn't continue their murderous aerial attacks. Yet tragically, instead of condemning atrocities committed by the Saudi-UAE invasion, bombing and blockade of Yemen, the United States is cozying up to the leaders of these countries. As sanctions against Russia disrupt global oil sales, the United States is entering talks to become increasingly reliant on Saudi and UAE oil production. And Saudi Arabia and the UAE don't want to increase their oil production without a US agreement to help them increase their attacks against Yemen. Human rights groups have decried the Saudi-UAE-led coalition for bombing roadways, fisheries, sewage and sanitation facilities, weddings, funerals, and even a children's school bus. In a recent attack, the Saudis killed 60 African migrants held in a detention center in Saada. The Saudi blockade of Yemen has chalked off essential imports needed for daily life, forcing the Yemeni people to depend on relief groups for survival. There is another way. U.S. Representatives Pramila Jayapal of Washington and Peter DeFazio of Oregon, both Democrats, are now seeking co-sponsors for Yemen War Powers Resolution. It demands that Congress cut military support for the Saudi-UAE-led coalition's war against Yemen. On March 12, Saudi Arabia executed 81 people, including 7 Yemenis, 2 of them prisoners of war, and 5 of them accused of criticizing the Saudi war against Yemen. Just 2 days after the mass execution, the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council, including many of the coalition partners attacking Yemen, announced Saudi willingness to host peace talks in their own capital city of Riyadh, requiring Yemen's Ansarullah leaders to risk execution by Saudi Arabia in order to discuss the war. The Saudis have long insisted on a deeply flawed UN resolution which calls on the Ansarullah fighters to disarm, but never even mentions the US-backed Saudi-UAE coalition as being among the warring parties. The Ansarullah says they will come to the negotiating table but cannot rely on the Saudis as mediators. This means very reasonable, given Saudi Arabia's vengeful treatment of Yemenis.